Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bikini in the Brain. Big surprise. Woo! Ashley is in town today.
Hello, friends. I'm talking to my best friends. You guys are like my only friends. Like, I have like two.
But we just talked about it. You're going to be getting more friends then.
You're one of my friends.
We're going to be getting more friends. I was in Vegas last weekend. In Vegas, Ashley was like, you have so many friends out there already. You're going to have so many friends, and I'm not going to have so many friends. I was like, no, you're going to be your friends too. She's like, I'm not a friend. Stealer. I was like, no, we'll be a friend sharer. So Ashley's about to get a bunch of more friends in Vegas because Ashley is how many, well, this will be posted in a week. So how many weeks till will you be in Vegas?
I think, well, gosh, what is next Thursday or Friday?
Like the 22nd or the, no, 6 days from now. So the 29th.
So, I would be days away from moving into my new house, guys.
So Ashley is super stoked. If you're in Vegas, Ashley's going to be in Vegas.
Yes.
She needs friends.
Let's be friends. I'm desperate for friends, you know?
So we're still figuring out gym scenarios and whatnot out there for her.
Yes, but speaking of gyms, Adam, give us the updates because if you guys are out of the loop, Adam made a big plunge here.
Yeah.
Big decision, which I'm super excited about.
Yeah, guys. So I did put an offer in. I put my deposit in everything. Ooh. On a gym. So right now we are looking at buying us a gym in Vegas. It's going to be a CPC style gym. So I don't like gyms. Like, as an owner of a gym, I don't want to be an owner of a gym per se, because it's a lot of extra work that I don't want to do. I want to concentrate on personal training and getting people ready for shows and transformations. And you can't really do that if you own like a gym and you're managing the gym itself. So, it's going to be another like contest prep center, but it'll be open to everyone in Vegas. Every competitor, you can come in. You can come work out there. I don't charge for it. We're going to do posing classes there, all that good stuff. It's going to be a good like community thing. So
yes, and hopefully done before Olympia.
That's the goal. So
yes, hopefully everything goes through. But I saw the building and I got so excited because it looks so cool. And it's in a pretty popular neighborhood, I guess, like maybe 15 minutes away from Planet Hollywood, which is the new location of Yes. Yeah, so yeah. Really close to the strip.
Yeah, exactly. It is 15 minutes away from Planet Hollywood. It's like 8 minutes away from UNLV. If you guys are from there, they say it's like east downtown, southeast downtown Las Vegas. So I don't even know the area that good. But it's a popular area, so it's good for everyone who flies in. It's like 15 minutes from the airport. So it's just a great thing. So go to my Instagram and stories and whatnot. You can see, I'll post stuff up on it. But
that's pretty exciting. I'm just so excited about this because I'll be so close and I won't have to go all the way here to train at the CPC because we'll be training at CPC 2. What do you want to call it? CPC 2?
I don't know. I think I'm going to call it CPC probably. CPC Vegas?
Okay.
That makes more sense.
Yes.
But we have some really cool plans. I have an artist that I'm working with that's going to be doing a bunch of cool art in it. It's going to be a really cool spot. It'll be small. It's not going to be a big gym. So don't expect a big gym. It's a psycho studio like ours is, which is pretty good size.
And I'm giving my Olympia medals to put in there too. My three Olympia medals. Yeah, as long as they're in a safe spot.
We're going to put them in a secure box. Okay. You come in and visit if you're in town for the Olympia. So the goal is, so the contractor told me from the day that I purchased, it'll be 18 weeks before he can finish. It'll take exactly 18 weeks for permits and everything like that. And so we already got blueprints and he's actually already starting that process with getting permits and whatnot. So maybe even faster, who knows? But I think it's 50-50 that it'll be done before the Olympia. And but it'd be pretty sure it'd be done by like February of 2021 for sure. So anyway, so we'll see. So stay tuned with that. And but we got a cool topic today.
Yep.
Which is?
It's a topic that everyone needs to hear because a lot of people go through it. I actually don't know any competitors who have been in this for a while who haven't had a bad off season or made some mistakes in their off season because the off season's tough. You know, it's a slippery slope, I would say, because you're allowed to be more relaxed, but you can't let your progress go downhill to where it's harder to get back.
Yeah.
And I know you don't like to call it off season. You like to call it improvement season.
Yeah.
But there are many mistakes that I know that I've made in my years I regret because I just didn't know better, you know? So now that we have Adam here on the mic, he can tell us how he's going to guide us through an ideal off season.
Yeah, I think that the off season obviously is where people get lost in this and they make the biggest mistakes is that off season. here's the thing that I think people really need to think about. And you got to think about how you want to do this. So are you doing this for health and fitness? Are you doing this to be the best in the world and make a career out of it? Those are two different, totally two different things. So if you're doing it for health and fitness and it's like a transformation goal for you to get there, then yeah, your off seasons are going to probably be a little bit looser, a little bit more free. Still doesn't mean you should be doing it as a, like blowing up in the off season or anything like that. We'll get to that. But if you're doing it for, hey, I want to be a pro, because I get probably half and half. People are like, I want to be a pro and I want to be in the Olympia stage. For you people who are out there who want to be a pro, want to be in the Olympia stage and actually want to get to as far as you can possibly get, you need to understand that this is a sport just like any other sport. It's not going to be easy and it's going to take your best effort to get there. And it should take your best effort to get there. I think people forget that. I think people think, oh, it's just fitness. So I'm going to work out. And then during the off season, I'm going to have a little bit of fun and go out with my friends and drink a whole bunch and gain 15, 20 pounds. And then when it's in season, I'll be super serious because I want to go pro. Well, that's not how anything works in life. You know, the top 1%, which is what the Olympia is, it's not even the 1%. It's like the 0.001% of people who can actually get there. Think about it is someone who's a billionaire, right? To be that 0.001%, that billionaire businessman or whatever he is to do that, it should be hard. It should be impossibly hard. It should be so difficult that most people would quit. Otherwise, everyone would be there. And it just, you got to put that into perspective. Okay, I'm also trying to do something that great. I'm trying to be the next Michael Jordan of my sport. Michael Jordan, if you like watch his story, watch his documentary, which is a really great one, that guy was just obsessed with being the best. And he wouldn't have an offseason where he gained 40 pounds, 30 pounds. So you have to take it to that level of extreme. Mm-hmm. If you do want that end result. Now, I'm not saying you chicken and asparagus the rest of your life if you want to do that, but you're going to have to be regimented for a long period of time. Because mm-hmm. those are the people that we see. It's the same people too. It's funny because I'll see the same people who are like, oh, I want to go pro. And they do three national show seasons in a year in a row. So three different years mm-hmm. of national seasons. And then finally they quit. And I'm like, you didn't get there because you didn't improve from show to show. All you did was bring the same physique every year to the show because your off season was not based on you getting better at your sport. So when you have these athletes who take an off season, they're like, okay, I'm going to get better at my sport. I'm going to run faster by next year. I'm going to be bigger by next year. I'm going to be whatever by next year. But sometimes in our sport, you'll get people who they want that, but then their actions don't dictate that. They're like, oh, I'm going to try to just be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more balanced in the off season. And then I'm going to try to grow a little bit of my glutes. And then what happens is they gain 15, 20 pounds and they might make some improvements, but by the time they lose that 20 pounds, they lose all the new gains too. Because when you lose a lot of weight, you're going to lose some lean mass. You're not going to be able to maintain all of it. It's impossible. So, I mean, if you're only gaining 6 pounds, yeah, keeping all your lean mass, no problem. But the longer you diet, the harder it's going to be to cut, to get your lean mass back or to keep your lean mass, and the harder for it is for you to be 100% when you step on stage because you're dieting so hard towards the end to get that 20 pounds off. Mm-hmm. So two different perspectives there.
I think I think that's very important what you said. And I feel like sometimes these people that, go so far off in their off season to where they have to lose a lot of weight, you kind of lose focus of the improvements you have to make. So just like you said with the glutes, like let's say I need to bring up my shoulders, right? And in the off season, I'm training my shoulders really good, but I'm also kind of slacking when it comes to the diet. I'm putting on more weight than I should. By the time it comes to like contest prep time, when I'm, let's say, 12 weeks out or whatever, my focus no longer becomes, oh yeah, let's get this shoulder cap going. It's, oh gosh, I gotta lose a lot of weight. Yeah. So it's like the effort and energy you put in is more focused on, oh God, gotta lose weight, gotta get lean. And the thing that you were trying to improve in the first place, let's say shoulders, is like taking a back seat,
Yeah, and also when, that's the thing too, is when you start, here's the thing I tell people too, is like I call it pulling back the curtain. To see where someone needs to improve, to actually visually see where someone needs to improve, you have to see them in show shape. You could see them kind of close to show shape and be like, okay, this needs work, that needs work. But until you pull back the curtain of body fat, I call it pulling back the curtain, you can't see the tie-in so good. You can't see what the shoulder caps look like because there's arm fat hiding how good your shoulders look. You know, all these little things. We can't see how sculpted your waistline is. We can't see if it's curvy or not if you have 15 pounds of body fat. So it makes it really difficult to like look at your physique and say, this needs improvement. This still needs more. This still needs more. And so what happens is, let's say you're in a 16-week prep and you're at week six to go. You're 6 weeks out from your show. Now we can finally start seeing, oh, your tie-in actually looks pretty good. Or, oh, but what happens in the other scenario? Oh, your tie-in is not there yet. Like, we need way more glute tie-in still. We need, your shoulder caps aren't what I thought they were going to look like, because as you started losing body fat, your cap didn't get better like I thought it would. So then we're like, okay, we need to focus on building that. Well, at that point, 6 weeks out, one, you're not going to build that much muscle in 6 weeks for an advanced lifter. And two, your calories, they might be so low because we're still needing to lose so much body fat. The odds of you gaining a good amount of lean mass is almost impossible. You know, you can gain muscle in a caloric deficit, but not a lot, not when you're in those extremes. So that's the other reason for it too. We're trying to, I think we got to like put things in perspective and be able, and explain, like, we're trying to do something the body doesn't want to do, you know, and we have to think about that. We're trying to be lean, which is leaner than the body wants to be, because the body survives. It's like a survival thing. We want to have fat and energy reserves just in case we can't eat for a while. So the body thinks, okay, I should have some body fat for storage. We're trying to get rid of almost all of that. Then we're trying to be muscular more than the body wants to be, which the body thinks, okay, I only need to be muscular as I need to be to get around in life. So you're adding more muscle, which burns a lot of calories, which the body doesn't want to do. It doesn't want to burn extra calories, but doesn't need to, because it's dangerous, because it uses too much energy that way. And then two, you're trying to remove all the energy storage the body has. So it's counterintuitive to what the body wants to do. We're already doing something the body doesn't want to do. It is an extreme sport when you put it in that context. So you really are going to have to earn it, you know, day by day. And so that's why I'm a big proponent of, hey, like, in the off season, I like people gaining about 6 to 8% of their stage weight. And everyone's like, oh, that's way too lean. I'm like, it's not that much. We're talking 120-pound person, like 8% of their stage weight. We're talking, you know, 10 pounds. That's
right.
That's very realistic for someone who's 120 pounds,
right?
10 pounds above stage weight.
And I noticed too, sometimes, I mean, I think it's getting a little bit better now because this knowledge is out there. It wasn't years ago, but if you take a look at your regular fitness model or Instagram fitness model, they don't get as lean as a competitor would, but they stay that amount of leanness basically all year round.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we can do that to some extent. We can't stay necessarily stage lean, but we don't have to make these huge fluctuations, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure we all know that one person that loves working out, loves to do cardio, loves to go run just for the heck of it, loves to eat healthy. You know, I know someone knows at least somebody in their life that's like that. And they're not fluctuating crazy, but they stay relatively lean. And we need to have that kind of mentality as well. I know that ever since I started training with you, I no longer fluctuate big time. I used to. Back when I was prepping with somebody else, and that was kind of like the knowledge that was given, like, oh yeah, you should eat more in the off season because in order to put on muscle, you got to put on some fat. And it's not true. And I do see like a shift now that this information and people like you are coming out and spreading it, but you still see that big myth that you need to put on all this weight in order to grow muscle. It is still not true. And if anything, it's just a big pain in the butt to get off, and it can wreak havoc on your, maybe not metabolism, or what would you say, your thyroid, or how would this damage your hormones?
Well, you know what happens, it's more like a hormone response. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what metabolism, essentially, that's what it is. If you break it down, people always talk about metabolism like it's an organ in the body. Oh, my right. Metabolism is slow. There's no metabolism organ you have in your body. Metabolism is essentially your body's hormone response to food and whatnot. So what if you diet for a really long period of time, you diet harder than you need to, you're doing a bunch of cardio, your body will adapt hormonally as well as metabolically. So, you know, you're starting to produce less testosterone, you're starting to produce less growth hormone, your cortisol levels go up, your thyroid hormones could go down, your T3 to T4 thyroid hormone conversion is less. So like, you have all these factors going on inside your body that are slowing down your hormonally, which technically is metabolically, right? So, and that's where you're getting that suffering from. And then, you know, that's, and then when you're talking about show prep towards the end and you're having less testosterone and more cortisol and, you know, lower thyroid, yeah, you're going to have less muscle. It's going to be harder for you to keep muscle in that scenario. Your growth hormone's less too. So it's like, it's so much better. And what's cool too is like the coaches, there's this like big divide of the science guys, right? And then the, who I call like, honestly, who I call like the real coaches. I'm always the nice guy, but I'm a little bit controversial sometimes.
No, you're not.
People always like say things about what I talk about, like,
oh,
other organizations and whatnot too. But, I'm an NPC diehard, and I'm a, I'm an NPC diehard. Cause that's, so that's a whole other topic, but that's where the best are. You know, that's simply the case. NPC, IFBB. Anyone talks about who the best in the world is NPC IFBB. That's the big pond. You know, there's other organizations are big fish in small ponds. You know, I think some of the guys would do okay if they switched over, but you see like world champions come from like WBFF and go to IFBB and they do like okay. They might get a pro card, but then you don't see them on the Olympia stage like killing it and things like that. It just shows you how amazing the IFBB is, how hard it is. If it's baseball, it's the MLB. If it's basketball, it's the NBA. You know, it's the top tier in the world. And if you win that, you are the best in the world, no doubt. But one of the things is that I find is that the best, there's like a science-based coach, right? Where it's just science and they're like research. I almost call them like research coaches more than like coaches, like the real coaches. Like the real coaches aren't the research guys. They're two different people usually. You look at the guys that are like on top. You look at the Kimotos, the Damians, you know, James, Ricardo Panin, like you look at these like top guys who are producing it. They're not like research guys. The research guys, you don't see them at the top, but yet they give out the most advice and talk the most about the guys who are doing the things that they aren't doing. Yeah. So like that's something that's really, really like, it's an unfortunate thing in our industry because you get the biggest voices who aren't doing the best in their results, you know, but the one thing that even the top coaches are agreeing on now that they used to not agree on, even with the research guys, is that staying lean in the off season is absolutely necessary for you to make the improvements. And the other thing they're agreeing on, at least the guys I mentioned that are in like the bikini division as their primary, Damian goes back and forth between figure, but he does the same thing with figure too. And they all kind of agree on is, hey, stay lean in the off season. Doesn't mean that if you gain body fat, it's not going to equal more muscle. It never will equal more muscle. And that's a one cool thing that's kind of translated in both areas. So both the contest prep coaches that are like the hardcore coaches that do a really good job, and also the research guys who are, you know, maybe prepping people for like natural shows or whatever, and maybe doing well there, they're also saying the same things too. So that's really cool because it's very rare that they both say the same thing. It's almost like you look at it like parties almost. It's like Democratic Republicans but saying the same thing. So everyone essentially is now agreeing, okay, more fat does not equal more muscle. The only people saying that are like really, really old school meathead coaches. And it's been proven, you know, you're not going to gain more muscle by gaining more body fat. It's just not going to happen. So there's never been 1 ounce of muscle gain because 1 more ounce of body fat was gained. Those have never correlated. So you can build muscle in a caloric deficit. You can build muscle at maintenance calories. And yes, you can build muscle at caloric surplus. You might gain a tiny, tiny bit more muscle at surplus because you're reaching all of your potential of gaining muscle with those extra calories. But the problem is that whenever you have to lose that body fat, now you're going to lose that maybe that small amount of muscle you gained. And maybe even more because of how much you have to lose. So
question real quick, just to clarify, when you say to utilize the entirety of the energy, correct? Is that what you said? That's why caloric surplus might help.
But exactly.
Is that because the actual energy, like you have more energy in general to get a good pump? Is that what you mean by that?
So here's the, we'll go into it a little bit technically because it's, I think this deserves that technical explanation. Okay, so first off, for a lot of you people, you're going to be like, oh, Adam said you can build muscle in a caloric deficit. That's wrong. You can't build muscle in a caloric deficit. You're either anabolic or you're catabolic. You can't be anabolic and catabolic at the same time. I know this. I'm very aware. So you always get like these guys, oh, you're wrong, this because of this. Well, the thing is, there's this thing, there's a theory of nutrient partitioning. It's not proven yet. I think it will be. This has been talked about for years in theory, and now it's like showing, I don't know if it's showing, the thing is, it's not, you can't show that internal shift, but you can show the results are happening with building muscle while on caloric deficit. And there's a couple different studies that have referenced this. You can look it up on YouTube. There's probably a couple of them. I bet Jeff Nippert did something on it. He does some good stuff on it. He probably did something like that. But I know that Coach Greg did too. Coach Greg did some YouTube stuff, and he did something on caloric deficits as well while building muscle. But the way that it works is, the theory of how it works is that there's this thing called nutrient partitioning. So let's, to try to keep it easy, we're going to use really round numbers. So let's say your body burns, 3,000 calories a day, right? Let's go bikini. Let's say your body burns 2,000 calories a day and you eat 1,000 calories a day, all right, to make it easy. So in that theory, you would lose, or in that situation, you would lose 1,000 calories a day from fat. Hopefully you'd use all that energy from fat, the extra, that 1,000 calorie deficit. Okay, so the theory is this. If you work out really hard and you like create a stimulus for calories to be stored and protein to be stored and muscle to be synthesized, just because you ate only 1,000 calories doesn't mean you can't use some of those 1,000 calories to build muscle. Okay, so now let's say the scenario that you used 200 of those 1,000 calories to build muscle. So now you still ate 1,000 calories. 1,000 calories is still leaving the body, right, from energy expenditure. But it doesn't mean that when you ate those 1,000 calories, 200 of those calories went towards building muscle and repairing muscle. And then what happens is your body still needs to have 1,000 calories leave the body for energy. So then now it's taking 1,200 calories from stored body fat, furthering your, I guess if you want to call it an internal caloric deficit, through nutrient partitioning. It's a little bit technical, it's a little bit tricky to understand, but just understand that the body's going to find a way to repair itself if you work really hard, even if your calories are low. And that's really essentially what it comes down to. Before, we were thinking, oh, if you don't feed the muscle then enough calories, then you're not going to be able to build muscle because you're either anabolic or you're catabolic, right? So the body can take whatever, it's an amazing machine. If it needs to repair muscle and it needs to be bigger and stronger, it's going to get bigger and stronger. It's going to repair the muscle and use the calories you have and use that stored energy for whatever else it needs to do throughout the rest of the day. It has no problem doing that. It's not as efficient as having extra calories, of course, because then you don't need to do all this shifting around and take fat out, take fat, like oxidized fat, to use the energy. So now when you go in the scenario of building muscle with a caloric surplus, you have an excess of calories. So it's very easy for the body to just take those calories and put it towards muscle. So in that scenario, you got to understand, in the first scenario, it's not as efficient for the body to build muscle. It's a less efficient way because it's a big caloric deficit that's happening internally. It's still trying to preserve itself to some capacity. It's saying, hey, this deficit's getting pretty big. I might need to slow down hormonally, whatever, right? And then in the surplus, or even in the maintenance scenario, now the calories are just available and easy for the body, right? So yeah, you will optimize how much muscle you could build, but we're talking a minute amount. When we talk about how much muscle someone can build, especially an advanced lifter, you're talking about grams of muscle a week. You're not talking about ounces and pounds of muscle. Like these guys who are trying to gain 1 pound of, you know, of muscle, 2 pounds of muscle a week, even the guys that are taking PEDs, they're not capable of doing that. It's just not gonna happen. You just don't build that much muscle that quickly. And so I think that's another thing we have to remember. When we're trying to build muscle, there's a limit, there's a cap to it, especially weekly, and how much you can build. So if you look at, like, let's say a bikini competitor, let's take an Ashley, for example, on stage about 121, 122, it's kind of our golden range there. Well, let's say we put on as much muscle as we could in a year, and Ashley's like, okay, I want to put on 1 pound a week. Like, obviously, Ashley couldn't show up at next year's Olympia at 154 pounds, right? Of lean, oh no, 100, that would be 100, so 52 plus 20, so it would be 174 pounds.
I'd be like women's bodybuilding by then.
You'd be way
I mean, like men's bodybuilding.
Yeah, that'd be like men's bodybuilding. So, like, you got to understand, these people who are trying to gain 1 pound, that's at 1 pound a week. We all have friends that are trying to gain 2 pounds a week. Like, do the math on that. You're like, okay, bro, you're going to gain 104 pounds of lean mass this year. at so, 2 pounds a week? No way, you know?
Question for you then. So maybe it's good also to clarify, what's the difference between gaining muscle and filling up the muscle? What is the muscle filled up? It's glycogen, correct?
Yeah, a whole
and,
bunch of things.
And water.
Mainly, yeah.
So if you're eating more foods that are, you know, got more carbs in it, more sugar, maybe you can fill up the muscle, but it's not necessarily a gain. It's just
exactly nutrient. And I think that that's important too, to talk about like post show, because you are going to fill out after a post show. So that's where it becomes a little bit difficult. Like I say, you know, gain 10 pounds, 10 pounds post stage weight, but there's some people who go on stage a little bit flat, and I'm the guy that's, I never overshoot unless I need to. So like, it's hard to explain this, but in prep, I never am going to sacrifice someone's conditioning for size. So because conditioning beats size 7 days a week, all the time. That's why Sean Roden won the Olympia over Phil Heath. He was not bigger than Phil Heath. He was, I don't know how much lighter he was than Phil Heath, but he beat him on conditioning. The same thing happens in bikini, you know, more times than not. But sometimes you'll get some people, they like really, really full. And that happens too. Bikini's kind of all over the place with that. But so if, let's say it's like someone who's very muscular, like Ashley at the Arnold, and how Ashley's legs get, or someone like Frida who gets really muscular, or even Phoebe who gets really muscular. Those three, they get so muscular that we don't bring them in 100% full. We bring them in, Ashley's flat, like flat.
We really suck the carbs out.
We don't fill her out at all. Frida won't fill out much at all either, because she's got so much muscle that we don't want her 100% full. And Phoebe will be like 60%. But if you look at someone who I have, like Patricia Fritz, she's muscular, but she's so petite that we can bring her in super muscular. So she'll be 100% full. And so the way we get her 100% full is we diet her down, get her super lean. Amanda Larson is the same way. Kelly Smith is the same way. We get them super, super lean. And then we just eat the last week and kind of get them filled out. And I allow them to spill over, so I know they're 100% full, so they can hang with the other girls that are bigger than them, or their frame allows it, type of thing. So every girl's gonna be a little different. Now, that being the scenario, for someone like Ashley, for someone like Frida, for someone like Phoebe, because they're not 100% full on stage, their stage weight being, you know, what I say, hey, be 10 pounds over stage weight, they have a little bit more room because they have to fill out first. So that first week after the show, they're filling their muscles out. And so what that means is, think of a sponge, your muscle being a sponge, and the water in the sponge being glucose, which is basically carbohydrates in its second form or third form, whatever you call it, which is glycogen. So when it's stored, it's called glycogen, and when it's in the bloodstream, it's called glucose. And I don't know why they do that.
Just to confuse.
Just to think about it, right? So stored glycogen, you know, you use it as energy. So just think of stored carbs. It's called stored carbs. So you have a sponge, and in the off season, when you're eating a bunch of calories before prep, that sponge is full water. It can't get any more water in the sponge. The farther you get into prep, it's like you squeeze a little bit and you squeeze a little bit and squeeze a little bit. And the time we get to Ashley or like a Frida or a Phoebe on stage, we squeeze that sponge.
Oh yes.
Quite a bit.
Which we do so not by cutting water, by cutting carbs.
Very important. Yeah.
We don't cut water here.
Yes.
Or salt.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Water, it's the salt. Carbs we cut. Well, me personally, we kind of go low carb towards the end.
Yeah, we go pretty low towards the end, and she's a little bit flat, but that's how she looks her best. You know, that's how they like her. So when you get back off stage, you're gonna refill that sponge up. You know, that sponge is gonna reload. So you might gain 6 pounds, 8 pounds right after the show, which isn't body fat necessarily. Some might be, but then after that, I say, okay, 6 more pounds is about where you should be after stage weight, type of thing.
Right, which is so important, because I know a lot of people freak out whenever the next day after a show or the day after, they're like, oh my God, I gained, how did I gain 6 pounds already? And they think it's fat. Definitely not fat. It's impossible. I would say darn near close impossible for it to be true fat, because that would be a surplus of, you'd be having
18,000 calories.
Eating all day, just McDonald's, just like stuffing your face. Which I don't think people are gonna enjoy doing that. But
6 pounds would be 17,500 calories.
So it's pretty impossible
That's surplus too. That's not. So that means you'd have to eat like 19,500 calories to get a surplus. It'd be so hard. I think you'd. I don't think you'd be capable of doing it. I think you'd throw up the calories.
Oh, I'm sure I would.
There's no way, right?
My stomach can't handle that. I have a small stomach.
5,000 at 120, 5,000 is hard. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I got off track a little bit.
But while we're kind of off the track, I want to bring this up too. So I've been in situations before, I trained a few, that like the next few days following my show, I did get that puffiness, a little swollen, my abs disappeared, and my ankles got swollen. And it was a little uncomfortable to walk, and I just felt so bloated. I felt so blah, you know? So what can a competitor do to avoid getting like a puffer fish after the show, because it's really uncomfortable. It makes you feel like poop.
It's terrible, that edema that happens like after
the edema, show. Right? I remember flying home on some of my competitions like overseas, and I would have like a big dent in my ankles where my socks were. It was like, ugh.
So sometimes it's a little bit unavoidable. But there are some things that definitely cause it. Okay, there's some things that will be, like if you're doing diuretics like big time, that's one of the bigger reasons for it, when people are doing like, especially when you're doing like a lot of in our world, people take the extreme. So if you're doing like prescription diuretics, which I never really recommend, that is a possibility that will, you know, cause people to rapidly gain water weight back, because you're shifting your hormones around when you're doing that stuff, and then you start drinking water and you increase your salt, and that's what's gonna happen. One of the main reasons though that people do it is because of their sodium intake. So when they dramatically cut their sodium intake, and then all of a sudden they start having some sodium, then that's when that happens too. So one of the things I recommend is don't ever cut your sodium. It's not going to help you look better for a show if you cut your sodium. If anything, it's going to make you look worse. So,
and also your body is exposed to foods that maybe you go for a cheat meal and your body isn't exposed to, let's say, gluten or other foods that you haven't had in a while. You know, that could be it too. Yeah.
The gluten one, the lactose one, that's a big one.
Yeah. It's just your body's like, oh, this is new.
Yeah.
Or I haven't had this in a while. So it's just, it reacts in a weird way.
Yeah. So that's one of the bigger ones, especially with like your intestinal distress and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like when you have gluten, like you get that gluten sensitivity. Like I think that like most people have a gluten sensitivity from the people that I run into. So if you all of a sudden you don't have gluten, and all of a sudden you do have gluten, then you know, that's going to be one of the things that causes some major bloating, you know, major bloating. So yeah, so that would be something that you want to introduce slowly again. If you're having cheat meals all the way through your show, there's no reason why that should happen though too. Like if you're having like a cheat meal once a week, I do like free meals, especially if someone's ahead, I'll do a free meal. And then so it's just person by person on that. But the main one, don't cut your water. I never recommend that. If you're, you know, if you cut your water, you're probably going to just be flat on stage, and it's not going to be a carb thing. It's just going to be you're like, I couldn't get full till after the show. Well, you cut your water, you cut your sodium, and then you ate, you know, 1,000 carbs, and you're like hoping to fill out. Well, it doesn't work without the water. It doesn't work without the sodium. So that's something that I would never recommend doing. And then if you start, because all of a sudden you start shifting everything around when these things happen. So, sorry about that brief interruption. There's like guys screaming in the gym here, and I'm trying to shoot a podcast.
A little much.
A little bit too much. So I don't charge guys to come to my gym ever. I don't charge anyone to come to my gym. So if you're going to act a fool, get out. I don't make any money off of you.
Yes,
so,
I said Adam's the only person that's allowed to act like that.
Like, I don't care. Like, don't act a fool in my gym, you know? So screaming in the gym, it's free. You know, I give it free. So dropping weights, things like that, drives me crazy because it's so unnecessary, right? It's just so no gain has ever been made because the screams got louder.
Like, if I was working out downstairs, I'd be severely distracted. I would be like,
yeah.
Can I get to concentrate? Like, yeah. So distracting.
So anyway, yeah. So that's the first time Ashley sees me get mad. I had to go down and tell him to keep it down so we can record this for you guys. So where are we even at? Are we just going to see like a pause?
Well, we were talking about the off season and a little bit of a water rebound.
Yeah.
But now we can kind of coast on to, you know, we're getting into the off season. It's not just a few days after. How should somebody approach things like diet and cardio? Should they do the, what they would call reverse dieting? Because I know that kind of got a different meaning from what it was actually supposed to be, right? or should they just, you know, go right up to their maintenance calories, as you would say?
So yeah, so there's two trains of thought on that. Mm-hmm. And I've done both of them, and I'm still honestly, so what I consider myself, for one, I consider myself a prep coach, right? That's first. But the second thing, I consider myself is a little bit of a nutrition scientist. So I'm always trying to play with these things, trying to learn research studies and whatnot too. So I try to kind of sit right in the middle of the meathead and then the research scientist, because they're neither of them are 100% right and neither of them are 100% wrong. So I'm always trying to like figure this out. So the research scientists, and we got to remember the research scientists, guys, there's none of them are putting people on the Olympia stage. Okay, that's something that needs to be out there, right? Because I don't know any of them that are. So but you do have, you know, the guys that are getting people to Olympia stage, they're winning pro shows at the highest level. They're doing kind of both things. They're doing meathead things, they're doing research things, but there's none that are doing one only, you know? The whole meathead days, those guys getting people to that top level and winning like pro shows, that doesn't happen as much anymore, that meathead style. It'll happen a little bit in bodybuilding still, but not in any of most of the other divisions. So that being the case, the research guy says you go right to maintenance calories right after a show, what your presumed maintenance calories are, and you start getting your body fixed up hormonally and metabolically. And then the meathead guy will say, no, you slowly introduce calories, and that way you cannot gain any body fat, and you just slowly incrementally increase it. That way you do not gain body fat. The problem with slowly incrementally increasing body fat or increasing calories is you further the time someone's in a caloric deficit. So if they're still under maintenance calories, they're furthering their time that they're under maintenance calories. Right, the further in time they're in caloric deficit, therefore hormonal adaptions can be happening at a faster rate or still happening the whole time through. So let's say you prep for 16 weeks, but then you started slowly increasing calories. Well, now you're prepping for 20, 24 weeks because you reverse dieted for 8 weeks and you increased your calories so slowly that you just were in a deficit for 6 months now instead of just 16 weeks. So there's arguments for both sides of it. I think it's highly dependent on the person, also highly dependent on the coach and the goals of the person. If it's someone like Ashley, who was trying to be at the top level and trying to be, maybe getting another title again, well, then that is someone you want to bring calories up slowly, right? Because we don't want to have this huge weight gain because maybe we went past maintenance calories and it's impossible to figure out what maintenance calories are. Even I have testing equipment in here. In this gym, we have $100,000 worth of testing equipment alone. So we have, you know, just there's a whole bunch of things, but we have a metabolic testing device. So we actually can test metabolism. Even with that device, I still can't precisely calculate someone's resting metabolic rate and their active metabolic rate post-show and what their adaptions were. It's so hard. So you're going to overshoot a little bit. Even if you get right to maintenance calories, I still see people gaining more body fat at those like lower maintenance calories than they would if they were to slowly increase their calories. So it's a hard scenario to go with. So health-wise, I would say introduce maintenance calories right away, right? If you're not trying to be the next Miss Olympia, probably go right to maintenance calories right away.
So have that treat meal the night of the show or whatever, and then maybe the next morning have like a little breakfast and mm-hmm. then go right to the maintenance.
Yeah, and I think everyone can do that, you know, for the most part. I think everyone on both sides can do that treat meal after. And then you have people who are going to be more serious and they're doing this as like a real sport and trying to get to the next level. Well, then that person, I think that they would be like, hey, you talk to your coach. I'm like, hey, I don't want to gain any body fat really post-show. I'm cool with eating clean for the next 8 weeks and slowly increasing calories. And then you assess your physique and you're like, these are the areas I want to make improvements on and kind of go from there. So yeah, that's the two different scenarios. I think they're both right. I don't think any of them are wrong. Mm-hmm. When we're playing this for a sport, we're not doing it for health and fitness in a way that the normal person is for health and fitness. Mm-hmm. So I agree with, you know, increasing calories slowly and minimizing any body fat gain. Mm-hmm. And then I agree with the other one too, where if, hey, I want to be healthiest, get my hormones back 100% to where they were at the beginning of the show, that one is going to happen, is going to do it faster. Mm-hmm.
So as far as working out again, I know that, you know, I'm a big believer in the take like a week off from the gym, depending on when your next show is, it's okay. And you kind of are on the same page, I believe. And that doesn't mean I'm just sitting around watching Netflix. I'm doing more like active rest. Like I might go hiking or maybe go to the mall for a few hours. I'm not just like sitting in a chair. So usually I will personally take a week off. Now, what do you suggest for people to get back into their workout regimen after their show and going into off season? And how do we incorporate cardio? Do we taper it off? Do we keep the same? Or what's your approach to this?
So here's the thing. The goal in the off season is this: to stay as lean as we can get, to decrease cardio as much as possible, to increase calories as much as possible. So that way, when you start a prep again, your settings, or what I call settings, are at a point where we can start shifting those balances. So if your calories are really high and your cardio is really low and your body fat is only 10 pounds after your last stage weight, then it's so easy for us to lose those 10 pounds and get you ready for a show again. Right. All we need to do is we can increase cardio a little bit. We can decrease calories a little bit. And then the job is going to pretty much be done for us right away. So that's the goal. Now, that's what we call, you go through a period of resensitizing yourself to exercise, to cardio, to calories, right? That's what we call like the resensitization of this whole exercise thing. So you got to remember, guys, when your exercise is simple, you're trying to create a stimulus and then you're going to adapt to that stimulus. In between creating a stimulus and adapting to that stimulus is results. Okay, that's when your body's making those adaptions. So all we need to do is increase the stimulus of something a little bit to keep that window open as long as we can. So if you, let's say you're off season, you're eating like 1300 calories the whole time, the off season, which I run into people who do that, and you're still doing 45 minutes of cardio. Well, in that scenario, what is the coach going to do when you're like, okay, I'm ready to start prep now? Well, I'm like, well, what do I do? Your body's used to eating 1300 calories. You're used to doing 45 minutes of cardio. You gained 20 pounds of body fat. What do you think this prep is going to look like? This prep is going to look like a nightmare. It's going to be the week one, you're at 1100 calories. So that's just 200 calories less than you're used to eating. And week one, you're doing 55 minutes of cardio because we have to create some stimulus somewhere. Like that's a nightmare when we start progressing for 16 more weeks like that.
Yeah. So, I think like a lot of people grasp the idea of like, okay, maybe I shouldn't eat low calories year round because my body's going to adapt. But I don't think a lot of people realize the same goes for cardio. You almost don't want to get too good at cardio. It sounds crazy because then it's going to be more and more. And I always try to explain it this way. So I'm pretty active with cardio. I enjoy cardio a lot. So if myself and let's say a person that doesn't really do any cardio were to run a mile, the person that doesn't do any cardio is likely going to burn more calories than me. Or I'm going to have to try really, really hard to create that super stimulus, I guess, to get really out of breath, to get exhausted, because my body's used to running miles, right? But on the flip side, if you put me and a marathoner and we both run a mile, I'm going to burn more calories than the marathoner because they're doing that all the time. They're running miles and miles and miles. They're way more used to it than I am. So I guess that's my good comparison if you want to kind of nitpick that a little bit and explain it in a better way.
No, that's pretty darn right.
Yeah,
it's pretty darn right. Yeah.
So if you keep getting better at cardio, then it's like you're going to have to do more and more and more and more. And then you're going to be up to like 2 hours of cardio.
Yeah, and so to elaborate it just a tad more, if you have, let's say I have a marathon runner and they're like, hey, I want to do contest prep, but they need to lose 15 pounds, right? Well, it's going to be really hard for me to create any stimulus through cardio at that point. It's just not going to be a stimulus to them in a way where they're going to respond because they're doing so much cardio already. How can we do more? Like, what am I going to say to do more? They're already running 10 miles a day, whatever. So it's like, it's difficult to create a stimulus for someone like that. So that's what the coach's job is, to find the holes and the stimuluses where they're at and to not like fire them all off so early at once. I think of it as like shooting. I always say it like this analogy is like putting bullets in a gun. Okay. And so you have X amount of bullets to shoot for the prep. And if you want to, you know, win the war of this prep, you're going to have to shoot one of those bullets precisely when it's the right time to shoot it. You don't just like start the war and just don't look at who you're trying to shoot and just shoot all your bullets because you're just trying to get ahead. It's not going to work that way. You know, what you want to do is you want to aim, you want to shoot, you want to take your time, set up, aim, shoot, and you want to do that only when it's necessary. And hopefully, if in a prep, you can avoid shooting all the bullets. But a lot of times what I hear is people like start prep and like, okay, time to start prep. And like a switch hits, they eat their last cheat meal, whatever. And then the next day it's chicken and broccoli, 45 minutes fasted cardio in the morning, 20 minutes after their workout. And you're like, why are you doing, you know, an hour plus cardio your day one? Like, mm-hmm. you should do the lowest amount of cardio possible for you to get any results and then start from there.
So in order to create a stimulus, can you also switch up the kind of cardio you do? Yeah. You can do HIIT, or maybe you can try a different piece of equipment to create a different stimulus. I mean, thank goodness we live in a time where there's many, many different cardio equipments to choose from, and each kind of has something different to offer. Some incorporates the arms, some of them just legs, some of them, you know, can be at an incline. And I think all these things are great to switch up. So if you're doing the same piece of cardio equipment for the same time every day, it's not going to do much, I guess, once you start to get used to it. But if we switch up the cardio or the piece of equipment or the intensity, or maybe try intervals, that might be a little more beneficial so that we're not always, you know, getting used to the same thing.
Yeah. So there's always this thing like training. So intensity versus volume versus frequency. That's always a thing. It's called the FIT principle. So FIT principle is FITT, which is frequency, intensity, time, and type. So those are all different variables that you can switch up to make, to create a stimulus. So if you're doing, let's say, so time is one of them. If you're doing 30 minutes, well then 10% more is 33 minutes of cardio. That's a stimulus. That's a new thing. So frequency, intensity. So if you're doing 30 minutes, but you're going real light and you want to do less cardio, you want to do 20 minutes, 15 minutes, well then you can increase the intensity. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then there's frequency. You go from 3 times to 4 times a week. And then there's type, which is, now type is a tricky one because some types don't work as good as other types. So that's the thing, but you want to be inefficient, like Ashley said. And so I like to explain this as like a baby deer, right? When a baby deer is born, it's like, and it starts walking, it's so wobbly and super cute, right? It's all wobbly all over the place. Well, that moment where he is wobbling all around and trying to stabilize himself and trying to learn this technique of walking, that's when he's most inefficient at burning calories, because he's doing the same movement he's going to be doing in, you know, 30 days from now, but he's doing it in a very inefficient way. His body's not used to it. He's wobbling all over the place. He's stabilizing. He's doing whatever he can to just move, right? But later on, a month from then, he starts moving in a very efficient, very straight pattern. It's very calorie efficient in terms of how he's moving, burning probably half the calories he was when he first started walking. So we have to think about that too. So when we start running from not running for 6 months, well, that's going to be our most inefficient way of doing it. Body's going to be like, whoa, what are you doing to me? I need to learn how to stabilize. I need to learn this movement pattern again. I'm burning more calories doing it than I would be if I was an expert marathon runner. And that's why you get expert marathon runners who can run a marathon, and why you can't just jump off the couch and do it, because the adaption period of becoming efficient at that movement pattern. So that being said, running is probably hands down the most like calorie burning, highest intensity type of movement pattern you can do versus doing things like a bike or doing like a rower. So that's the trick there too. So when you have frequency, intensity, time, and type is great, but there are some types that are worse than others. So running is great. Stairs are pretty good, but stairs are less than running, right? Rowing is great, but rowing is less than stairs and running, you know, in terms of calories. So when you're talking about switching up types and you go from running to rower, well, it's not going to be as much calorie burning, unless you do it in a HIIT manner and you're really going to exhaustion. But even then, you're stabilized, you're sitting, it's going to be really hard to get the same type of intensity as you could from doing like pushing a sled while running or by running a burst up a hill. It's a tricky scenario for people to like put into their own context. This is where the contest prep coach has to kind of like guide. But yeah, so that's, I guess it's always been tricky, right? It's never so super easy.
Yeah. I also kind of wanted to bring up the point that there's a lot of competitors out there that deal with intense cravings in the off season. And I think it's kind of like, once you have that taste of the real deal, you know, maybe a real sugar cake, yeah, or whatever, like not fake sugar, but real sugar, it's kind of like you almost get a slight addiction to it. And if you haven't had it in forever, it becomes like the only thing you think about. And I get a lot of messages being like, how do you control your cravings? How do you handle it? How do you deal with it? And I can honestly say that it took me years to kind of like enjoy my healthy food better. Very rarely do I crave unhealthy food. If I do, it's more of like a sweets thing. But I'm not craving like nachos, not a nacho mountain with cheese running down. Like I don't. Like I really enjoy my healthy food. And I think maybe it's because I've learned how to cook it in a way and season it in a way that tastes amazing. But also we live in a time that's like, there are so many healthy, calorie-friendly options available. Like, can you imagine like 20 years ago dieting like versus what goodies we have now? And we've done a few videos like for YouTube that kind of displays our favorite healthy snacks and what we do when we have a craving. I know a few of mine are like even as simple as sugar-free gum cuts off a lot of cravings for me after a meal. Or if I'm craving something sweet, I'll do my chopped up cucumbers and stevia. But I have all these like little tricks that I know that kind of satisfy my sweet tooth. And I don't really have intense cravings anymore. It's very, very rare. But I do find that like once I do have a taste of that real food, that it's like I'm more like, oh, I want that again. So it's kind of like a, I don't know how to explain it. It's a cycle. But as long as you kind of keep yourself in check, because I'm not saying like don't ever have, you know, a piece of cheesecake. I'm not saying that, but you know, you don't need the whole thing. You can have a little sliver of it. But you know, just know when to stop. And I think a lot of it is also when we're going out for these meals, we're also not considering that we need to hydrate ourselves as well before we go out and have it. So we kind of overeat and it becomes a cycle.
Yeah. And so that's a thing too, when you're, so I guess we'll go into a little bit of it too, because this is actually, I think, good for people to hear. We're kind of, this is kind of fun. We dove into some serious stuff here.
Like
diving in some technical technical things. This is like the perfect example of like the Bikini Brain podcast, right? Like what it would be on paper, like this episode is exactly that.
Yeah.
So we could talk about it hormonally, like what's happening when that happens. So
get all scientific on us.
Do this. You know what? Not, those guys were distracting me earlier, but now I'm still like that. I was like screaming so
hopefully,
loud.
Okay, so if you hear any screams in the background of our podcast, sorry.
Yeah, that was earlier. So if you can listen closely, I couldn't even concentrate, man. These guys are literally.
I was like laughing a little bit. Like, are people trolling us? Like,
this is crazy. They're shooting a video, but it's like our guys. And I'm just like, went down there. I probably was not as nice as I should have been. But I do it. And then I'm like, I probably should have been nicer.
Oh, I know you're going to apologize later.
Yeah. No, but it's like, gosh, dude, it was so frustrating. It's like, I couldn't even concentrate. Like that.
I could tell because you were like breaking up sentences and stuff.
Right? Yeah. So if I sounded halfway, you know, I was talking about like a few minutes ago, that's why. Yeah. So let's go into the body in terms of like the hormonal responses that you have from food and why it does this. Okay. So we're all still like, it's weird that we grew up in this era that we grew up in, because we don't understand anything really like about the body in terms of, we understand more about the body in terms of technically, but in terms of what we can handle and what we're used to, we're just all, and me too, I'm not saying all of you are, but all of us, we're all spoiled brats in terms of like food consumption and what's available, and we don't even appreciate it. You know, we can go out and eat, we never worry about hunger in most countries. We would never worry about our hunger, we never worry about where our next meal is going to come from, we never worry about our crops being frozen over for winter and how we're going to eat if that happens. You know, we have refrigerators, we have meat at the stores, we have all this stuff. You got to remember, 100 years ago we didn't have these things. Okay, there's, you know, and even farther than that, maybe another 100 years ago, you had people that were going through extreme famine just because it was wintertime. You know, they would be very, very hungry. They would have people that would have to, you know, 200 years ago, have to chase an animal for 3 days to get something to eat. You know what I mean? We're designed to go through these feasts and famines. We're not evolved to the point yet to keep up with our modern day technology. Our modern day technology came at a way faster rate than our evolution, our ability to evolve as humans. So that being the case, like we still have these, like if you want to call them like these older, you know, these genetics that are telling us what to do. And when you go through this caloric deficit for a period of time, let's say you go through a caloric deficit for 16 weeks or so, and you're all of a sudden you start eating food, hormonally, the body is still telling us, hey, we finally got the ability to get some food in us. We've been hungry for so long. Eat, eat, eat. Eat as much as you can. And that way we can store energy for later. And we have to, like, you have to know what's going on. Otherwise, you're just going to give in to those, to that response. And it's a signal that the body's telling you to do that. And it's catastrophic for some people for a month after the show, you know, and they gain back 20 pounds their first month. And it's like, it's, there's something going on there that you need to understand and realize. So there's this thing called leptin and ghrelin. These are like your hunger and satiety hormones. So leptin is the one that basically tells you to decrease your appetite, tells you that you're full, right? And then ghrelin tells you you're hungry. You have a balance in your system that tells you this all the time. So that's why you get full when you eat and you just stop eating. Otherwise, you just keep eating and never be satiated. So these hormones, they kind of shift around when you have these big, big caloric deficits for long periods of time. And then what happens is, as soon as you start eating a little bit, ghrelin tells you you're really hungry because you have food available. Now, when you're dieting all the time, let's say you're in your first few weeks of dieting and you started dieting, you're hungry, you're really hungry. Well, ghrelin's spiking off. It's like, hey, get some food in me, get some food in me, get some food in me, right? And so you're really, really hungry. But then you'll all notice, like 3 weeks in, 10 days in, whatever, to your diet, you're not as hungry anymore. All of a sudden, like the hunger pains and all that went away. Well, that's ghrelin. It's suppressing now, right? It's like, okay, food must not be available. We must be chasing a deer for 3 days, right? and we're not going to make him more hungry, make him more miserable than he has to be, right? And but what happens is now all of a sudden you eat again. You eat a big meal. Well, ghrelin fires off like, oh, I remember this. We're getting food in. Let's tell our body we need to eat as much as possible because I don't know when we're going to be able to eat again. In reality, we're going to be able to eat again in 5 minutes if we wanted to, in another 10 minutes. It doesn't matter. So we have to understand that we're dealing with these hormone responses that we kind of don't have control of. And the way that you can control them is being aware of what's happening. You know, so when you start eating that big meal, be smart about it. You know, you don't need to eat 3 cheesecakes. That's crazy. You know, I see people do that all the time. Like, well, I want this flavor, Cheesecake Factory. You don't need to eat all 3 of them. If you want to eat a bite of all 3 or have a taste of all 3, great, do that, you know, no problem. But finishing it is a whole other story. You know, that's where leptin isn't doing its job yet either. It's not telling you you're full. But then a couple hours later, when it catches up to you with your eating, you're going to feel like so full and so sick. So just understand that there's things going on that you don't have control of that you need to mentally have control of. You need to be like, okay, I know what's going to happen when I eat this cheat meal. I'm going to get really, really hungry, and then I'm not going to be full for probably 2 or 3 hours, and my body's going to keep telling me I'm more hungry than I actually am. And then if you can go into that meal knowing that, then you're not going to go through and really sabotage yourself for the next, you know, for your next prep. I've had people work for 20, 24 weeks before, disappear like the month after their show, even though we did a higher calorie, lower cardio method. And then they would just come back and they're like 25 pounds heavier. And I'm like, what? Like, you lost, why would you lose all that progress?
Which, by the way, I just want to cut in real quick. A great tip I have for whenever you do have that post-show cheat meal or treat meal, I should say, or anytime you're going for like dinner and you know it's like your free meal, drink some water before. Drink a lot, because that's going to fill you up a little bit already so that you don't overindulge, you know? Because if you don't have any liquids with that and you're just eating food, you can eat a lot without actually feeling full. But if you have some water in there, have a few glasses already, you're going to make better decisions with your food, because you're going to fill up faster, or at least you think you're going to fill up faster. And then once you pee, then it's like, okay, I'm not like stuffed or bloated or anything, you know?
And this is, and both, you know, I am saying, hey, eat a hamburger, eat some fries.
Yes.
But that's it. You don't need to go crazy. You know what I mean? So, and that should be, considering what you've been eating, that should be enough. So I guess this could go on for hours and hours.
Yes.
This is a good topic, yeah. Right? So do you want to call it here? And then, because we probably have a longer
one. I think we got a good podcast for today.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think this is this one we can go into a part 2. So let's do this. For all of you listening who've made it through to the end, 1, we really appreciate you. 2, if you have any other topics that we didn't cover in this post-show thing, let's do a number 2 to this.
Yes.
And like, talk about the off season and post show.
And by the way, for topic recommendations, the more people it applies to, the better. Because sometimes we get topics like, hey, I have a topic for you. Can you give a full workout for somebody that's dealing with a rotator cuff injury on their left shoulder who doesn't eat this amount of cup, like blah, 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 super specific to like, it would literally only apply to them. What works best for us is if we see like, oh, this topic is, can be very useful to a lot of people.
Yeah. And so, so there's two different, you know, message us, DM us, whatever. I have a new thing I set up too, where you can text, you can just text me, which is really cool. And I send out, like, it's basically like a, if you look, think of like an email, like an email list sign up type of thing, but it's through text. So you can also,
I signed up.
So if you do have that specific question, I am actually answering the specific questions. And it's like, you're getting it through like an iMessage, just like a text message. And then you'll also get like fitness tips that I'll do. So that number is 303-536-3766. Text me. If you do have a specific question like Ashley talked about, you could text me that specific question. I will get to it. I don't know how long it'll take me to get to it. They're starting to come in, but I will absolutely get to it. And then, you know, text me your topics, whatever too, it's fine. And we'll kind of go from here.
Right? Awesome. Well, thanks for listening in. We appreciate you guys. And let us know how you like this episode.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks, guys.